please reconvene. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Let's see, before we begin our second argument of the morning, we have a little bit of a different game plan than we often have because we have three lawyers, so I want to go with what I have here, and if it's not correct on what you all think you're doing, please let me know so that we're all on the same page before we begin. Okay, so to begin, Attorney Jonathan Cermelli, did I say it right? Okay, so you're going to have 15 minutes, and then Christopher McGillis, you will have 10 minutes, and then Stuart McCamell, you will have 30 minutes, and then 5 minutes again for Attorney Cermelli. Okay, is that where we are? All right, with all those preliminaries in place, then we will begin our second case, Milwaukee Police Association versus the City of Milwaukee.
Good morning. My name is Jonathan Cermelli. I represent the Milwaukee Police Association and Michael Corbello, petitioners in this matter. This case addresses the ability of members of the City of Milwaukee employees retirement system to vote for and seat board members of that system, and whether that ability is preserved for modification by means of the session laws and the charter, or whether the city can alter that ability by prohibiting whom ERS members can vote for, by limiting the classification that they can vote for, and by limiting the number of board members who may be in any particular employee classification, such as police, fire, or general municipal employee. The way I see the issue here is whether that ability to vote for and seat ERS board members, which is identified in the 1937 session law and preserved in the 1947 session law and codified in the city's charter, is a right that is in fact preserved under the 47 session law and the charter itself. Now, the 47 session law, specifically section 3.1.1.
Council, is it possible for the legislature to change the composition of the board?
There is nothing that would prohibit the current legislature from modifying something that a former legislature had done, except to the extent that the right that is created has already been vested.
All right, so let's put a finer point on it. The recent changes to the composition of the board were accomplished through an amendment to the Milwaukee Charter, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Could the legislature have made that change?
You mean the legislature in Madison?
Yes.
The legislature in Madison could make that change prospectively. The legislature in Madison could not make that change applicable, what I would view as, retroactively. In other words, to those members who had already had a vested right in that ability.
So what do you mean by that? What does it mean to change the composition of a board prospectively but not retrospectively? I mean, to my mind, if you change in 2013, you change the board from 8 to 11 members, you've done that prospectively.
The problem is when you change it from 8 to 11 members and you modify voting abilities and rights that existed before, that's problematic for those who already have
that. No, the board has already voted in 2013, prior to the amendment making it 11 members, the board had already voted on everything that board was ever going to vote on, right?
The board continues to exist, so I wouldn't agree with that.
Yes, but it doesn't make backwards determining decisions, right?
Simply.
So the 2013, and yet let's use 2013 as the dividing line and say it was 11 members after that. So the 2013 board is going to make decisions from 2013 forward, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. And so the board, as it was comprised, up to 2013. They've made all the decisions they're ever going to make, right?
No, sir. The board continues to exist.
Yes, but it exists now in an entirely different composition. It's 11 members now. And as we say of legislatures, when they are seated, that's a new body every time they're seated, right?
Yes, okay. But the legislature didn't modify this,
right,
this charter ordinance.
All right.
The
so
city
now,
of Milwaukee did.
Okay. So the legislature, so would you agree with me then that the legislature here in Madison, they could have added the three seats?
I would agree that that would be much more problematic for me.
Okay. Why?
Because the state legislature, there is nothing that says a new body of the state legislature cannot modify a command of a prior body of the state legislature. There is plenty of law that says a legislative act cannot be modified by a future municipal body, which is what occurred here. So we don't have the issue as to whether or not Madison can say we're going to take these rights away.
What we don't. But this is preliminary to getting to the central question, which is whether you have a vested right in the composition of a governmental board, right? So what I want to figure out first is it possible to have a vested right in a governmental board? And that cannot be true if the legislature can change it.
Well, that's likely why I did not concede to your assertion.
I imagine that's probably. I imagine that's probably why.
Counselor, I would like to ask you a little bit of a question about, just to be sure that I understand the argument I think you're making. It's your assertion that back in 1937, the legislature created a board that permitted those folks who elected the representatives to the board to elect three of them. So they could have all been firemen. They could have all, well, in 37, the police and firemen were not part of the retirement system. But those who were involved in the retirement system, they could elect three people. Three were appointed by the president of the Common Council, correct?
Yes, sir.
When home rule was granted to the county, that's when the county took over the retirement, excuse me, the city. That's when the city took over the retirement system. And if I understand your argument, what you are saying is that the city was restrained in the home rule grant on what they could change in regard to this retirement system board.
Correct.
Okay. And they were restrained, if I understand you correctly, two ways. One, by the city's charter, which essentially speaks to no rights, benefits, or allowances whatsoever. I won't read the whole paragraph. It's in both of your briefs. Or allowances expressed in this subsection and shall be deemed fully vested, contractual, and binding on the employer, the city, and guaranteed by it. So that's one reason you think you have a continuing right that started out to elect members of the board. And the other is when the home rule amendment was made and the city of Milwaukee got home rule, there was also a limit. They couldn't change rights or benefits or, quote, other rights of any persons who are members of the system prior to the effective date of such amendment can't be diminished. So you're figuring the police and fire members were members of the retirement board in 2013 when their rights were diminished.
Yes, ma'am, that
okay.
is correct.
So it's those two parts that you rely on for your representation that the city can't make the changes that it made. Is there anything else that I've left out?
No, other than that those two provisions are, you can see them both in the session laws, the 47th, and the charter themselves.
Yep.
So if you look at the session laws, you would be looking at, for the home rule provision,
yep,
section 31.1. Yep. If you're looking in the session laws with regards to the great big long other rights and diminution, et cetera, you
yep
would be looking at, section 30. Of the
mm-hmm
1947 law.
Right.
And the same almost identical language can be found in the charter itself.
So what precisely cannot be changed?
any, according to the home rule provision, any existing annuities, benefits, or other rights cannot be changed. Now, we know this issue, the ability to vote, is not an annuity. We know it's not a benefit. Madison teachers looked at what were benefits under the charter with regard to pension. It is most reasonably considered an other right.
Is there any case in Wisconsin that has defined or given some hint as to what that means, other rights?
No, ma'am. It's interesting when you look at all of the pension cases, whether it's Stoker, whether it's Welter, Ray Rauer, or you look at the other non-pension cases, Loth, Schweigel, none of them, they all talk about benefits. They're focused on a benefit structure. Do I get a multiplier? Do I get a retirement benefit? This case is unique in that we're not saying we have a vested benefit. We're not saying we have a vested annuity. We're saying that in 37, the legislature mandated, one, the existence of a board, two, the board's makeup, and three, the ability of ERS members to vote for a certain number of people on that board.
So, Council, you would acknowledge that the city does have the authority to change the composition of the board, right?
The city does have the ability to change to create a new board if they so want.
Uh-huh. All right. So your position is the city has the authority to make changes to the board that you like.
That I what?
That you like.
I don't know how to respond to that. What the city has the ability to
That's
do
a loser.
would be
say no.
No. What the silly? Thank you.
No, just trying to help.
What the city has the ability to do is to say we get to change things that are not identified in the 37 or the 47 law. In other words, things like a multiplier. They can change that going forward for people that are not yet hired. The ability to change things is a function of an other programs that are identified in the 37 law.
But, Council, but your position is that the city can add one seat as long as that's a seat that is not a city seat, but they can't add three seats if there are city seats.
My position is that the 37 law, if I can step back, and I only have a couple minutes here, the legislature didn't have to give ERS members an ability to vote or seat ERS board members.
Yeah, but you do only have a couple minutes. So what I really want to try to figure out is, I'm trying to figure out a way to distinguish between in 1972, when the city added a seat, and you're not objecting to that, why you now say that the city was powerless to add seats in 2013.
Okay. In 1972, what happened? They added a seat for a retiree position that would be filled by votes from retirees, and that would be a retiree person who would actually occupy that seat. That did nothing to alter the rights of ERS members, because ERS, quote, members are active employees. So while the 72 amendment said, we're going to put another seat on that board and give voice to the retirees who have skin in the game with regard to their own retirement assets, it didn't do anything to affect the members' rights.
Well, it diluted your vote on the board, didn't it?
It did not dilute the vote on the board for those who had skin in the game. And that's why I went back to what was the reason the 37 legislature did, which is something that is rather unique, saying we're going to have this board, and you know what? Here's the number it's going to be, and here's how it's going to be compromised. And those who have skin in the game are going to have a modicum of say over their own assets by being able to vote for and seat board members.
Council, I want to make sure I understand the breadth or narrowness of your claim. As I understand it, as you hearken back to 1937, what you are really saying is you have an other right as set forth in the 37 legislation, and that other right is a right to a specific composition of the pension board. It's not the right to vote generally, but the right to a specific composition of the pension board. Am I correct in understanding your argument, or if not, please correct me.
Kind of correct.
Okay.
I believe good enough.
No.
Well, that's not good enough. I believe that we have a right to vote, but that right cannot be diminished.
Just a minute.
You didn't answer your question, Justice Bradley.
Listen, when you have an opportunity to ask, you can do this. This is what we do, back and forth,
please.
So you have a concern that your vote is not diminished vis-a-vis the questions asked by Justice Kelly in 1972. But what about the non-union members' votes? What do they have a concern if their right is diminished? So it seems to me that you're really talking about the composition itself,
I think I understand your question a little bit better now. We have three classes of ERS members, police, fire, and general municipal employees. The 2013 amendment, modified or reduced the voting rights of general municipal employees just as much as it did for police and fire. Why? Because it said you have to have one police officer, one firefighter, and one general municipal employee on the board. Before, you could have had all three cops or all three general municipal employees. And general municipal employees carry the vast majority of the voting strength. So by limiting who could be seated, and then also by limiting who... I'm sorry, it's red. May I finish?
You may finish your answer, yes, please.
By limiting who somebody can vote for to only those people in their same employee classification hurts the generals as much as it does the protectives.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Chris McGillis, and I represent the Milwaukee Professional Firefighters.
Is there any difference in your position than the police associations?
No.
You're precisely the same.
Sorry?
You are precisely the same.
Yes.
Okay. What is the position succinctly stated?
The position succinctly stated is that the Common Council cannot take away a vested right.
That's a law, the rule of law. You can't take away a vested right. The problem is this a vested right and why? And what are we talking about?
As it goes to the vested right, that is the key question.
Right. And so what's the vested right here?
Vested right is the makeup of the pension board.
The composition.
Correct. I look at those as the same, yes, the composition of the pension board.
All right.
And Council,
if this is a vested right, then
he's not finished answering my question.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, please.
The best way for me to try to explain it is in looking at the Stoker case. It's a recent case that this court addressed a vested right. Because in addressing your question too, Justice Kelly, my opinion, if it's a vested right, if that's what this court says, I don't think it can be taken away by people in Madison. And the reason why is because once it's vested, once that court makes that determination here, that's a sacred right that cannot be infringed upon, even by the legislature in Madison. Because to me, it would be no different than, again, if that determination is made, it's no different than the pension, some sacred benefit that's determined to be vested.
So where did we decide that it is a vested right as to the composition of the board? It is a vested, I have a vested right in my pension.
So
I've been here, that's what the statute says. If you want to take it away or change it, you got to do the future.
Correct. And so as it relates to the vested benefit, in Stoker.
So the vested right we're talking about here is a vested benefit. Okay.
No,
I
is
don't
that
think
what
that's what
say?
He said. Then explain why that's not a correct statement.
Well, because if we go, our case is unique in the sense, as Attorney Smiley noted, is our what we're talking about here, the composition of the pension board, comes from the language of the session laws. This is the only case out of all the cases that have addressed these session laws, both with the city of Milwaukee and the county, because that language, there's mirroring language in both of those cases. This is the only case where we're specifically grabbing and talking about language that is in the session laws. So the other benefit, that language comes from the 47 laws. The composition of the board is in the 37 laws. That's where that language comes from. And
I think what you're being asked in simple terms is, what makes this a vested right? Why is this law, why is this particular part of this law a vested right, as opposed to other laws where the legislature can give and take away?
Because of the language that's in the session laws that says that it's vested.
What's the exact language you're talking about?
So the language as it relates to the first part is on my appendix, the firefighter's appendix is page 191. And it says, cities of first class are hereby empowered to amend or alter the provisions of this set in the manner prescribed by section 66.01 of the statutes, provided that no such amendment or alterations shall modify the annuities, benefits, or the rights of any persons who are members of the system prior to the effective date of such amendment or alteration.
So this is what, another right?
Correct. This is another right, as Justice Bradley was noting.
So what's your best argument that composition of the board is another right? That's what this boils down to. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so there's no cases, I don't know of any precedent or any authority that actually addresses what another right is. Judge Dugan in the circuit court asked, well, what are the other rights? Like, what is this? And part of our response was, well, the framework, there's certain things that the session laws list. There's duty disability retirement. That's in the original session laws. There's ordinary disability retirement. There's death benefits. The sort of this composition of the retirement system, I would submit that those are other benefits. The Common Council couldn't say, we're going to eliminate duty disability retirement. Those are other benefits that the members, not just police department, any member of the ERS system in the city of Milwaukee have. And when you look at, again, I think of it best when you look at the Stoker case. In that case, it was the pension multiplier. And this court looked at the pension multiplier and said, and they compared it to two cases, and there were City of Milwaukee cases. It was the Welter case and the Raywauer case. Both of those cases held that the employee had a vested right in, one, the conversion date on the duty disability, and two, the benefit of how much they get paid in retirement on a duty disability. But the court said in Stoker, they said, this case isn't like Welter, because this court didn't overrule Welter and it didn't overrule Raywauer. It said they're distinguishable. They're not like the Stoker case, because Stoker is a future action. The multiplier is based on accruing over time. It's contingent upon the employee doing things in the future, not on, like in Welter, where it says when you enter the system, when you become a member, you automatically receive a vested benefit to duty disability retirement of that conversion.
So, counsel, let's look at something that might distinguish this. What we're talking about here in the composition of the board is a question of governance, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so what you're asserting is that you have a vested right to governance in this board.
When you look at what... And I'm not trying to dodge the question, but when you look at what they actually did, what the amendment to the ordinance actually did here. So it did three things. First, it allowed the mayor of the city of Milwaukee to appoint three new members. The second thing it did is it eliminated, or it limited, I should say, who can be on the board. No longer before you could have three firefighters, three police officers, three general. Now it's only one firefighter, one police, one general. And then third, it said that it prohibited firefighters from voting outside their classification. They can only vote for firefighters. And so when you talk about governance, I think generally you can equate the two things that you said, but when you look at the particulars of the facts in the case, not only are you diluting the vote, but now you're also saying you're prohibiting a member of the system to vote for whoever they want. They can no longer do that.
Yeah. Well, that's something that the legislature had already introduced in 1947, isn't it?
Well, they did not introduce the prohibitions that are from the Common Council, no.
Not those prohibitions, but similar. Right? So when they added the new seat to the board, they said only beneficiaries can vote for that board member, right?
Right.
So the concept of voting by classification was introduced by the legislature in 1947.
Not that exact way, but I think the part that's key is that in the session laws, it said.
Right, before you go further, I actually did want to get an answer to the earlier question, which you did a fine job of dodging. I have to commend you on that. So is it not true that you are arguing for a vested interest in the governance of the board?
I wouldn't use that word governance, no. I would argue that we're seeking that there is a vested interest, vested benefit in the makeup, the composition of the board.
How is that distinguished from governance?
Because that's what the original, that's what the language in the session laws has.
Well, I know, but they were describing governance. Tell me why they were not describing governance.
Is governance defined someplace in the?
I don't know. I mean, typically, no. I think that, you know, the number of people on a board and their duties and responsibilities, obligations, those typify governance, right? Or isn't that what they're doing? They're governing.
Ran out of time. May I please finish?
You may answer the question. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Generically, yes. I mean, I would say that generically that we're seeking a vested benefit in governance in that generic term. But what we're really seeking to do is enforce the specific language that's in the session laws that was put in place and that the Wisconsin legislature said you cannot diminish, you cannot impair after you get in the system.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before you begin, counsel, and if you'd hold the time, I neglected to mention that Justice Gableman is participating. I saw you all out there for the last argument, so I know that counsel knows Justice Gableman is watching on Wisconsin Eye, but because we record these hearings, it needs to be on this record. So I want to make a record of that Justice Gableman, though not sitting at the bench, is currently watching Wisconsin Eye. He did participate in pre-argument conference before we came out for our first case, and he will participate in the decision. Thank you. With that little announcement, please proceed.
Thank you, Chief Justice. My name is Stuart S. Muckamal, Assistant City Attorney for the City of Milwaukee, representing the city in this matter.
Counsel, how does your position give any effect to the words in these laws about other rights?
Well, that's a very good, complex question. And I want to play off a comment that Justice Kelly made on more than one occasion. This case is about pension plan governance and about the ability of the city of Milwaukee to govern control its own pension plan in accordance with the direct language of the 1947 session law. That was the intent of the session law. It's in the words of the session law. When you speak of other rights, Justice, you're speaking speaking of the final proviso of the 1947 session law, which is the only check provided in that law upon the city's plenary authority to control its own pension plan. It talks about benefits, annuities, and other rights of existing members not to be infringed upon or limited or modified. That's common language, by the way, in pension laws. It's in section 40.19 of the statutes that governs the WRS system. It's also in place in the laws that govern the Milwaukee County pension system, and those are the only three public pension systems within the state of Wisconsin. Other rights is a term that's not defined anywhere. We know that this case is not about benefits and annuities. My distinguished co-counsel have conceded that point. MTI v. Walker has established that point. This is not a benefit case, which, by the way, takes it out of the ambit of Section 30 of the 1947 law, which Mr. Cermelli cited, because Section 30 only applies to benefits. It doesn't apply to a matter such as governance. So, therefore, that section's irrelevant. Section 31 of the 1947 law is the only section of the section of the session law that's relevant to this question. Other rights not having been defined, it is therefore up to one who asserts the existence of another right to prove it. In other words, the burden of showing that governance of the system, composition of the board, selection of its elected active trustee members, it is up to the party asserting that other right in those matters to prove it. It's their burden. It's not the city's burden. The city only has to show that this is not an other right, even though other rights might exist. We have always conceded
that. Why is that the case? Why is it their burden to prove a definition of an undefined term rather than you equally sharing that burden of explaining it to us?
Because they have to show the existence of a right to begin with. Under Roth, a right has to arise from some kind of an act, some kind of contract. It has to have some source. It's like a tree. It's got to have roots. The alleged right that's asserted here has no roots. They've tried to derive it from the 1937 enactment, but as I've argued, the 1937 enactment is capable of amendment, capable of change, and that's what was done here.
Well, it's capable of change certainly by the legislature.
And by the city.
Where does it say in the 37 Act that it's capable of change by the city?
It says it in the 1947 Act.
Okay.
It says it by stating that the city has the right to amend or alter
but
Chapter 36.
It is a limited right, though, and I think you agree that in Section 31 of the laws of 47, the right is limited by a whole phrase. Other rights of any persons with an S who are members of the system prior to the effective date of any such amendment can't be diminished. So there's a whole lot there.
Well, they have to prove, and I'm going to reiterate, it's their burden to prove that this is an other right. We don't have to disprove it.
Why not? I don't get that argument. I mean, we're just in a civil case, so nobody's got the burden of proof. I don't know of a presumption.
Because there's no source of an other right. It says that we have the right to control the system. And this is a matter of management and control. It's a settlor function.
Can you give us an example of an other right that may not be modified?
Yes, actually. The other rights that were outlined in the Lightburn case might prove the best guide to what an other right might be. In Lightburn, the court said that members of the WRS system, and the same reasoning applies here, have a right not only to their individual benefit accounts, but also a broad property right in the assets of the WRS system. So for that reason, we had cases such as Milwaukee Police Association v. City of Milwaukee back in 1998, which invalidated the transfer of funds from the general assets of the ERS system to the duty disability system. That's an example of an other right. Another other right might be the right to assure that trustees of any public pension plan system faithfully observe their fiduciary duties. And remember, fiduciary duties are the highest duties known in the law. I should know that. I've been a fiduciary twice. I am one now. So I have a fairly good idea of what that entails. It's a very strict standard of conduct. And that would be an example of an other right. But what is not an other right is the right to determine how a system is governed. And that's why, for example, I cited in my brief the Detroit Terrazzo contractors case and Fuchs v. Allen, which established the proposition that the structure by which a pension is governed, whether a multi-employer trust, whether ERISA, whether a private trust, or here a public trust, is a settlor function. It's not even a fiduciary function. It's one to be determined by the plan sponsor. We're the plan sponsor. This is for us to determine, us being the city, the structure of a plan.
Counsel, can you enlighten me on the nature of the MERS board? Is that a governmental board?
It is a governmental board. It's an instrumentality of the city, although it's independent of the common council. And that becomes important in certain contexts.
Is there any private aspect to it at all?
It's not a private sector board in the sense that you would understand, for example, a corporate board. It's governed by some of the same standards of conduct, although not by the same laws. It's chartered. Charter Chapter 36 is the governing law. It has members from the private sector that are either appointed or elected according to the terms of Section 36-15-2 of the city charter.
Is it possible for a private person or entity or group of people to obtain an ownership interest in this board?
Not that I'm aware of.
Would it be possible for the city to decide that no longer would anyone be able to elect any members to sit on this board? Absolutely no elections.
That's a good question, Chief Justice. And I would say this. Number one,
I understand that, but it's the logical conclusion of what you argue.
Absolutely, it's possible.
And that would be totally lawful. They could just say nobody can vote.
That's totally within the power of the city to do.
Okay.
Because it says that we control the system, and that includes controlling how the governing body is structured.
Right,
there's no right to an elected member at all.
Okay, all right, that's a fair answer to my question, but and that's your opinion, I get that,
yes.
But it was the opinion of the board that they could do transfer disability benefits, and when it came up to this court, we said, oh no, that really is not what you can do. They really do have a vested right when they get hired to a particular kind of disability benefit.
They do, because that's a benefit. And when you're talking about transfer of funds within the system, you're talking about transfer of the funds necessary to secure a benefit. You're not talking about that here.
Right, but that was not defined as a benefit by the board, or the transfer would never have been made, because the board tries to operate within the confines of what they're directed to, correct?
Partly correct.
Okay.
The 1947 session and Chapter 36 of the Charter includes certain contractual guarantees.
Right. Okay. I read part of them before when we talked about it.
And in fact, that was explained at some length in MTI v. Walker. Those contractual guarantees included the actual benefits and what I previously described as the broad property rights of MERS members and members of other public pension plans to know that funds that have been committed to the pension trust are being properly expended. If you're transferring money from a general fund to a duty disability fund, there's a good argument that you're impairing the ability of the system to pay out general benefits because the funding has been impaired. That's not anything close to what we're dealing with here. We're not talking about money.
No, we're just talking about a voice.
We're talking
people wanting to have a voice.
People, okay.
Right.
Number one, there's no guaranteed right to any particular kind of voice. One can't find it anywhere in any of these enactments.
Well, that's why we're talking about other rights.
That's right.
Is it another right? That's really what we have to answer.
Right. But they'd have to connect other rights to a voice. We claim there's no connection. Number two, if you're talking about oversight, which is what the plaintiffs in their briefs repeated again and again, oversight has nothing to do with how many people sit on the board. The board is an open book. Everything they do is a public record. Every meeting is a public meeting. You don't need a particular number of members of the board to exercise oversight. But this might implicate control of the board. And control is very different than oversight. And control of the board under the 1947 session law is committed to the city. That is a set law non-fiduciary function that the city has the right to determine under the 47 law. Just by saying that there is other rights doesn't tell you anything about whether this item is an other right, and we claim it isn't another right.
I think both sides are kind of, for me anyway, talking around the seminal issue, which is having a say, the composition of the board, the right to have a certain ability to meaningfully voice your opinion, is that an other right? And you're saying they have to meet a burden of proof.
And I'm
not sure where that is, and so I'd like you to outline that for me. But, I mean, if we're just looking at law and trying to figure out what the words mean, I mean, if they're ambiguous, are you saying they're ambiguous? Do we need to look further?
I'm saying it's not ambiguous. It's not another right because there's no basis to conclude that it is.
So an other right is a fiduciary right, and that's it. That's what I heard you answer to Justice Brown.
Another right is a right that's connected with benefits or contracts to assure benefits or other rights that are assured by contract. You can't just claim that there's this amorphous classification of other rights that would swallow the ability of the city to govern its plan and to amend Chapter 36.
Well, you're just stating a general rule of interpretation of legal enactments. So if you got a list of things and then you got a general other block, they're viewed as being similar to the listed.
So can the composition of the board...
Can he answer that question? Is that your argument?
I'm not sure I understood the question.
Well, it was more of a statement.
Statutory provisions.
Yes.
Right? And it says, no dog, cat, raccoon, or other animals shall be loose without proper identification on a leash. And the question is, what does other animals mean, right? In the example I gave you.
Well, you ought to read a mayhem case that I wrote a long time ago. It's many, many, many pages of a lot of different propositions and how that does or doesn't work depending on the context. So
yeah.
It's a complicated question.
It is a complicated question.
Well, we're here to answer complicated questions. We're not here to answer simple questions because... We don't need that.
What I'm trying to say is that this is really not that complicated a question.
I don't think it is.
Because the term other rights not having been defined, not having any root to the question of governance, which is clearly a function of a plan sponsor and a pension plan, you have to connect it up to something. You have to connect other rights to the proposition advanced here. And I don't see a connection.
Does the governance or ability to have a voice, and kind of combining those phrases, can that affect the benefits? Can it affect the two preceding terms?
No, not necessarily.
You can't affect my benefits in any way if I don't have a vote.
You can't touch benefits. That's sacrosanct.
So what does this board do?
This board administers the plan. It carries out the fiduciary functions of the plan.
Does it hire staff?
It hires staff.
Does it determine how it pays the staff?
It determines how it pays its own staff, yes.
Does it govern how the staff operates?
As would any employer, yes. It governs the administration of benefits. That's a fiduciary function.
That's right.
Well, if it doesn't affect the members, then why do they even bother voting?
Right.
Well, because the city has constituted a board that includes voting rights, not rights, voting privileges.
How the staff operates, how they're paid, what the number of the staff is, all affects the members who are governed by this.
It does not affect the level of benefits or the funding for those benefits. Those are determined by the common council.
Well, who pays the administrative staff?
Who pays? The city.
Yeah.
The city pays.
Aside from the...
They're part of the city budget.
Okay.
The board doesn't determine their salaries. Mm-hmm. The city does.
So back to my question, what does this board do? What's it decide?
It administers the plan. That's how every pension board...
What do you mean?
Operates.
Give me a real answer that makes sense to me.
It determines, for example, the information technology supporting the benefit payment system. It determines... It appoints the actuary that values the plan.
And does it determine investments?
It determines investments. It determines asset allocation of investments, for example. It has a wide range of functions.
The board membership could have a big impact on the value of the benefits and annuities for the members, so their representation does matter, doesn't
it? What it could affect is the value of the trust fund, but what it can't affect is the level of benefits.
The level of benefits, sorry, but the amount of benefits. Because if you have somebody on the board who's selecting particular investments and they don't know what they're doing, or they're being too conservative, or they're being too risky, that could really affect the value of the benefits for members and retirees, could it not?
But that's where fiduciary duties kick in.
Right, but there could be fiduciaries who are more talented than other fiduciaries.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with whether you're an appointed or an elected member.
Why not?
Because the same fiduciary duties apply to every board member.
But shouldn't the members whose benefits are affected have the right to select their representative, because that representative perhaps says, I'm going to be really very conservative with these investments. I'm going to protect your money. Or the members might want somebody who's going to be a little riskier so they have higher returns.
That's not for the members to determine. That is not a member right. It's
Council,
not a right as rights are defined. Certainly
Council,
not a vested right.
Can we just kind of cut through that a little bit, I think? The members get the same benefits whether or not the trust fund performs. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. So
the city has guaranteed it through the taxing authority.
Right. So if it doesn't come out of the trust funds, it comes out of the city's general coffer.
Well, it comes out of the trust fund, but the trust fund has to be replenished by the city's general coffers as
right.
needed.
So regardless of how well the members do in growing the pot, the members are still going to get their benefits regardless.
They're still going to get their benefits. They're still going to have whatever terms and conditions are associated with those.
Well, you know, there has to be some reason why the whole composition of the board was changed. Okay, there's some reason that the Common Council agreed to let the mayor appoint three people and continue the three that the Common Council president appointed in the initial board, and then said, and in addition, you folks can only vote on a like-kind member. There's got to be some reason they did that. Why did they do that?
Well, let me preface the answer to that by saying that the issue here is not whether the city had good or bad or in the middle reasons for doing what it did. The issue is whether they had a right to do what it did.
I want to know why they did it.
Well, I'll get to that right away, Your Honor. There were several reasons why they did it. Number one was to broaden the representational base on the board by assuring a seat for general city employees. Now, that's not uncommon to establish these what I call silos.
Aren't they the biggest voters in the city? So they could have always elected somebody.
They could have, but they hadn't.
Well,
you
they
know,
can
so,
choose like we
but
all
the city
choose.
Has the right to establish a broader representation. This is the method they chose. And this is not uncommon. If you take a look, for example, at WRS's structure, they have a number of boards that feed into the Wisconsin Retirement Board, and they've all got defined representational constituencies. similar to what we have here. There is no right to have an at-large election or any particular type of election. And that's all that this case deals with, is where, what do they have a right to? And
Counsel,
we claim that this is not a right that inures to the members.
But why did they do it? You still haven't told me
no,
why.
No, they did. That was one, to assure broader representation by assuring a police seat, a fire seat, and a general city seat. Second was to assure more taxpayer and citizen representation. And third was to assure more trustees that require vetting through the Common Council confirmation process and therefore could have their backgrounds, expertise, and other matters that contribute to their service as trustees vetted by the Common Council.
Okay.
But those were the three reasons that I understand
okay.
that the city did what it did.
Thank you.
May I? It's been a while since I've asked a question.
Please.
Thank you very much.
I'm next.
I want to go back. I want to follow up, actually, on a question that Justice Ziegler asked.
I could have given
previously.
You another one, Ann.
Thank you. And that is really getting back to the basics, because we have perhaps some imprecision in wording, perhaps not. As I see this analytically, the first issue is, number one, does a right to composition, a certain composition of the board, do the plaintiffs have that right? Number two, and part of that is, if so, where does that right come from, of course, but do they have that right? And then number two, is the right vested? And number three, does the 2013 amendment, which changed the composition and manner of the board, abridge the vested right? So, first of all, am I correct in that kind of general analytical framework? Number one, does, maybe you should say, does the right to a specific composition of the pension board exist?
No.
Okay. I know that.
That was an easy one, right?
But then you don't have to get to does it vest if it doesn't exist.
Right.
And so that's really the quintessential question here. Am I correct in saying what the quintessential question is?
I think you've hit on all three, Your Honor.
Why? Well, no, the quintessential, I mean, the other ones don't come into play if you don't, first of all, find a right to a specific composition of the pension board.
And there is no such right. The even if the legislature in 1937 established an initial board configuration, in 1947 they said to the city, you can change it. You can change Article 36 in this respect. And my position, the position of the city, is that the final proviso, which is the only check on that power, doesn't come into play here. It's not a benefit, not an annuity, and not another right. But the answer is, even though the legislature originally established a 7-member board, that board can be changed. It was changed by the city in a number of respects prior to today, prior to 2013. It was changed lawfully in 2013. It's within the power that the legislature granted to the city back in 1947.
Could the city do away with the board?
That's a very good question. The reason I hesitate to answer it is because the legislature, I believe, may have mandated the creation of a board in 1937 because it mandated the creation of a system. You'd have to have a fiduciary running a pension system. There'd have to be some governing authority. Whether you needed a board or whether it could be done by one person is an open question. It probably could be done by one person, although that would be quite a task for that one person.
And let's say that's theoretically possible. Would the legislature have the authority to make that change?
I think it would. I think, the legislature, having delegated a power to the city, as a general proposition, can always withdraw a delegation. But I think it would require a specific legislative act to do that. And I mean legislature here in Madison, not in Milwaukee. The key to this case is that the legislature hasn't done any of that.
Counsel, can I go back to what I was going to ask when Justice Bradley asked her question?
Sure.
I have two things to ask you. The first is, if I understood your answer previously to Justice Kelly, the people get paid the same amount regardless of what this board decides.
It's a defined benefit plan. The board has nothing to do with the fixing of benefits. Not one thing.
Okay. So they get the same dollar amount regardless.
Same dollar amount.
So then why, I mean, I'm trying to figure out if these words are surplusage then. I mean, do they mean anything? What's your right to a benefit? What's your right to an annuity? I mean, if you get that anyway, why add these words to this? And why add other rights? Is there commonality between what an annuity and what a benefit is, such that other rights should be defined by those two words? Or are they sufficiently different such that other rights is more expansive?
Well,
Or don't they really mean anything? Because whether one person decides or 10 people decide, these people are going to get the exact same dollar amount.
I actually tried to go back to the legislative history of the 1947 law and found nothing on that point. Other rights might have been a throw-in. We do know what benefits
I think we have
are.
To assume it's not just a throw-in,
no,
right?
No, we can't.
They had
can't
to mean
assume
something.
It away. That's why I suggested that Lightburn provides a clue as to what other rights might mean. But it's a term that kind of hangs out there, and that's why I claim that the argument that my colleagues have advanced is rootless. There doesn't seem to be a connection to it. Benefits and annuities are well-known terms. In fact, the contract rights of beneficiaries and members of the MERS system, as well as the county system and WRS, to their benefits and annuities couldn't be more aptly described, couldn't be more secure. I mean, it's there in several provisions in every one of these systems. You can't question those. And in MTI v. Walker, this court established that connection. But with respect to matters of governance and administration, there is no such connection. That's why the term other rights doesn't seem to have any applicability to the subject matter of what we're talking about here.
Are you saying, in effect, that because benefits and annuities means money, that that's what other rights mean?
Well, it also means terms and conditions associated with accessing that money, such as eligibility requirements.
Okay, but that's the point of getting money.
About.
So
money
do people on the board get to decide the terms and conditions of who accesses the benefits and annuities?
That's done in the charter. It's the Common Council that decides that. You know, the eligibility for benefits is a matter that's set forth in Charter Chapter 36.
Then why does anyone care who's on the board? If you get the exact same dollar amount, it makes no difference. Why even have it? Why did the legislature even set this up?
No, the city wants the best people on the board. They want people that have expertise in performing the board's administrative functions. And they also want people that are representative of all the constituencies that make up the member, beneficiary, and taxpayer population. Lightburn and Bilda recognize the existence of multiple constituencies with differing interests in those cases it was the county system. But those same multiple constituencies exist in the MERS system as well. It makes a difference who sits on the board, to be sure. But it doesn't make a difference as to whether they're appointed or elected, or whether they're appointed or elected from particular constituencies. They're all held to the same fiduciary standards of care.
Then why does it make a difference who sits on the board?
It makes a difference as to how good they are. It doesn't make a difference as to who appoints them or elects them. Mm-hmm. I'd like, with indulgence from the court, to just
very quickly, because we do honor our red lights and yours is on.
This is from Fuchs v. Allen, which is cited in my brief. The trustee's obligation to manage the investments and financial aspects of the funds is not rooted in any particular trustee in office. That duty is always there, regardless of who is appointed or elected trustee, and regardless of the method by which the trustees are chosen, amending the removal and appointment procedures has no direct effect on the finances of the fund.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Counsel, you have to connect the dots for me. Why does anyone care
who
sits on the board if it makes absolutely zero difference in what people get in their annuities and their benefits?
I'll try. First of all, the powers of the board are identified in the charter. We put them in our brief. They have the authority to invest assets of all the funds. They establish rules and regulations to administer the funds. They employ actuaries. They adopt tables to determine the amount of money that is to be deducted from an employee's wages to fund the employee's pension. They certify to the city of Milwaukee the amount it must transfer to the ERS on an annual basis. They invest, reinvest, and change such funds. And they have the ability and the power to invest in the city's debt structure. That's why it's important that that's why people are concerned about who sits on that board.
So if you invest in the city's debt structure, you can invest part of the money that's being set aside for pensions into the debt that the city incurs, or you loan it to the city and they give you a note back, or what does that mean?
You would perhaps invest in city's notes and bonds, and to the extent the city is financially sound, that may be a good idea. To the extent that it is not, that may not be a good idea. But that is their what they were given in 1937, and it's in the charter. Now, in terms of other rights, if we look back to the original document, the 37 legislation, there are a slew of rights that are there. And if you start on page, I happen to have my compatriot's appendix with me, so it's his appendix, the firefighter's appendix, starting at 155, and you go on to 169. There are certainly benefits that we have talked about, and the benefits are the amounts of money that an individual employee is to get, just like an annuity. All right. There are, however, rights in this document. The right to membership in the ERS, the right for the city to contribute to the ERS, the right to have a program allowing for ordinary disability or duty disability or death benefits, and the existence of a board and the ability to vote for and seat board members. If those are not rights or, quote, other rights referenced in the 47 legislation, I don't know what it is. And the city has never once said what the ability to vote for and seat board members is, if it is not, in fact, an other right. And for the city to now say that there are no other rights except annuities and benefits renders that language surplusage, and we know we don't do that. That's
Council,
inappropriate.
Council, can you give me an example of any other public board or governing body in which a non-governmental entity has a vested right in its governance?
I know of no other board where the employees can vote for, no public pension plan, where the employees can vote for board members that run that plan. Now, I don't know that I agree with you, Justice, with all due respect, that this is an issue of governance. Governance is what may result from the board's actions. But this is not, I'm not saying we have a right to govern that board. No, we don't. We have a right, in my opinion, to vote for and elect the number of people that existed prior, the number of people on that board that existed prior to the 2013 change.
And is that a property right?
That is, unlike benefits, I do not believe that is a property right. And that's why I take issue with Mr. Muckamel's assertion that we have to establish a property right under Roth. I think this is a right, and Mr. McGillis said this in his brief. This is a statutory right. The legislature gave it to us.
Right.
Us
but, But statutory rights can be taken away, right?
They can be taken away to the extent that they are not vested.
All right, so that's the key, is to figure out what it means to have a vested right and a statutory right such that the legislature can never change it.
That would be the case, and that's why you're on that side of the bench.
Counsel, your response to Justice Kelly, as I have it anyway, is we have a right to vote for the number of people that previously existed on the board. Is that...
It
did
was
I get
inartfully
that?
Stated. Okay. We don't have any right to vote for the entire board members. There were, I believe, eight prior to 2013. ERS members could vote for three. Retirees could vote for one. That means four out of eight. I'm saying they can't change that.
You have so your argument or your asserted right is you have a right to vote for four out of eight members on the board? I just want to see what your asserted right is. Because it's a composition, but what
yes,
specifically?
And not to be pigeonholed into only being able to vote for someone in my employee classification, or not to be required that, or not to be told that we can only have one cop, one firefighter, and one general municipal employee on the board. That should be, as envisioned by the 37 legislature, up to the members of the ERS. And it is the ERS, the employees' retirement system, not the city's.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both for a very interesting case and a terrific argument. It has lots of issues here, some of which we have not obviously looked at before, but all of it was very well briefed. Thank you very much. I know it took a lot of time, and I've got my appendix so marked up, and I went and got more stuff out of the session laws. So it was very interesting. Thank you so much. We're going to take a break now for lunch, and we'll be back for our afternoon case at 1:30. Thank you.